The board is meeting to order at 1:35, special services.
I don't have to be talked to like that.
Thank you all for coming for April 2nd. I will say who's in attendance, and I know Mr. Cartier just left, but I want to announce him too as he came in. Council people, Diller, Retta, Council President Bullock, Councilman Powers, Councilman Collins, myself, Councilman Bell, and Councilman Cartier and Councilman Weiner are all here. Nine people are present. And my aide, Stephanie Rizzo, is taking a minute, sending notes. There'll be nine of us. On agenda, we have one thing, and I have something under other that just came in. I'd like to announce through special service, not a major, but I want you to look at. But first of all, can we have a...
Motion on the minutes.
Second.
Motion made, second. Question on the minutes? If not, I hear acceptance by saying yay.
Yay.
Yay. All right, minutes have been approved. All right, we're going to turn this over to special services, which we have asset management update. And they'll tell us what they have planned for us in the future and what's going on.
I can tell the manager of special services. Jason Zern is going to do a presentation. This is, I think, the third time we're going to speak to this over the last couple of years. We are having some increase in personnel for our budget, which will be given in 2 weeks. Three of the people will be associated with this project, so we'll have an appropriate time to talk about one of the major undertakings the department's taking to get a better handle on all of its assets and to help us better manage our project.
Good afternoon again. I'm Jason Zern, working special services. Wayne had mentioned, I've been here a few different times on this topic. I think the last time was almost 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, something like that. So I'm sure you've remembered everything that I've told you before. Hopefully this is just a quick update on the status of this program development. Just a brief outline. I'm going to go over the philosophy of asset management. What's the goal? What are we trying to do in implementing a program like this? And then kind of a roadmap of where we are now, where we've been, where we are now, and how do we achieve our goal. And I'm going to basically outline two steps that we're actually starting right now. One is just simply to improve our data management, and then step two, of course, is to actually try to implement this plan and these principles. The steering team has been Rob Roth, John Husband, Tony Schiavi, Julie Neff. Dave Hofer was also involved. He retired last spring. The consultant that's been helping us through this whole process is CH2M Hill. We retained their services through, standard RFP process. They actually have helped the EPA write guidelines and standards for asset management. So we thought they would, be more than smart enough to help us in our own efforts here. And also they've had the experience of implementing programs such as this in other municipalities, and I've named a few here, Cincinnati, Palm Beach, and Pinellas County. So what is asset management? Kind of an industry standard definition is that it's a set of integrated processes to minimize life cycle costs of owning, operating, and maintaining assets at an acceptable level of risk while continuously delivering established levels of service. So what are we really talking about? We're talking about trying to juggle our risk, our service, and our costs, trying to balance each one of those. For Newcastle County, what that means more specifically is we've adopted this vision that our asset management program is going to consistently meet customer, regulatory, and environmental service expectations at the lowest asset life cycle costs. And the way we're going to do that is implement this program over a 3-year period, sustain it into the future to achieve efficiency, minimize overall costs of asset ownership, protect the environment, and provide acceptable levels of service to all the stakeholders. The asset management program will be embraced by the staff and stakeholders and will communicate a common purpose through the use of current and accurate information. Couple things I want to make sure that are clear. When we're talking about assets in the development of this program, we only looked at the sewer system only. So sewer pipes, manholes, and pumping stations. Excuse me. Asset management can be applied to anything that you own. Fleet asset management, building asset management, property asset management. I think we even have a contractor that helps manage this building called asset management, which confused me for a while when other people were talking about asset management. But so at least for the purpose of this program, we're talking sewer system only. When I talk about risk, the other slide talked about risk. We're talking about an operating risk, not really a liability like, you know, risk management. We have a risk management department. We're talking about the risk that our assets are going to fail, and if it fails, what happens? That's the risk, kind of an operating risk. So I just want to be clear about that. The other thing to point out, hopefully you see a very strong theme of current and accurate information, because asset management really only operates well if you have current and accurate information, which is why if you recognize in the beginning slide I talk about we need to improve our data management systems. That's going to be really important in implementing this program. This is kind of a graph. Hopefully it illustrates, you know, the idea of reducing the overall costs. The way we operate now is considered very reactive. When we recognize there's a problem, then we react and try to reduce the risk that we have incurred. So when you look at the funding, we tend to have these peaks and valleys when it comes to funding. You know, the best example has been the work we're doing in Brandywine 100. We've had to expend a lot of money in a relatively short period of time to fix those assets. So we kind of go on a roller coaster of unknown risk. And when we recognize the risk and recognize that, you know, we're at a point of near failure, then we have to spend a lot of money. And then as we spend money, our amount of risk is reduced because we're fixing the problems. But then sure enough, we find, okay, we've found more problems and now we have to react to that. So we get in these periods where there's major and minor financial crisis points. With asset management, what we hope to do is be proactive, recognize problems well in advance of when they're going to fail, so we can adequately plan and come up with the consultant uses the term of a portfolio of assets, so that we can stagger the improvements and therefore stagger the funding, so we know our risk and then we can proactively reduce that risk, and it should smooth out our funding and improve our ability to plan into the future. So now these are kind of the steps that we've taken in trying to develop this asset management program. The first thing, obviously, we had to develop our strategy and come up with our goals. What do we want to do? And basically, we, in very general terms, said we want to have the best program that we could. We want to use the best management practices to have a best-in-class program. But we also recognize that this program is going to evolve. We're not going to get there tomorrow, even next year. But if we start this journey, eventually we'll continue to improve how we operate. The next couple of tasks had to do with our consultant just becoming familiar with us. They reviewed our data and our software. They recognized this is the amount of data we have, but this is how much we need in order to run asset management. So they did that gap analysis. And they recognized that we need improvements to both our hardware and software systems, and also the processes that we use, these systems. They also recognized that, right, at least at the time, our strongest system was our geographical information system, our GIS. They interviewed our staff. I think it was almost 50 different people in our department, from the field supervisors, the pump mechanics, the crew chiefs, all the management, and we even brought back a couple of retirees just to get their thoughts, their ideas, their concerns, to try to get an idea of where we are at as an organization. The one thing out of those interviews that was noted is that there was no work expediter position. In other words, one person that's their function is to plan the work and make sure the work gets done. Right now, our field personnel are responsible to plan and also execute all of the work. And a lot of times, there's not enough time in the day for them to do all of that work, to adequately plan things and also be responsible for getting it done in the field. C.H. Truman Hill had noted that a lot of municipalities and utility companies have a position where they're solely responsible to plan that work. Level of service, what are our expectations from our stakeholders? Stakeholders being customers, residents, elected officials, regulatory agencies, and also our own workers. We need to be able to measure how we provide our service. So we came up with five different categories in which we could measure our performance: financial viability, customer satisfaction, regulatory compliance, public service and image and work environment. And then the next part of that is to benchmark. We have to constantly measure ourselves. How are we doing? Internally, that's basically our CMOM program, which I think you heard about a few weeks ago, where CMOM collects data, operating data. How many miles of pipe have we cleaned? How many overflows have we had? How many, you know, different metrics like that. But our consultant said you should actually expand that, because again, if we're going to be measured by public service and image, maybe we should start asking our customers how we're doing. Work environment has to do with our own employees. Ask them, how are we doing? How are we meeting your needs? When the consultant actually performed a little internal benchmarking system of our own employees, they recognized that our employees were very much aware of their responsibilities, how they fit into the bigger picture, but that there's room to further develop their awareness of how they fit into our whole organization. And then external benchmarking, how are we doing compared to other municipalities and other utilities? And I think that was part of the last presentation that I gave you guys. There's an organization called NACWA that basically takes surveys of all different municipalities and then provides information, comparisons between your organization and average, other organizations. Now, the benchmarking cannot be a direct comparison. No two organizations are exactly alike. But our consultant at least tried to pull information from municipalities similar to our size, similar to our customer base, and compared us with those types of organizations. And in general, they found that our resources were a little bit behind in all of those other municipalities as far as number of full-time employees, the amount of funding that we get, and that the system failures were actually slightly higher than other organizations. Now, this was a few years ago, and I think when the CMOM program was in its kind of beginning stages, so I think we've improved as far as system failures, but at least at the time, that's what they had found. So since I last met with you, we went on to further define our asset hierarchy, or how we organize our information. What we found is Hansen, which is our computerized maintenance management system, our GIS and TIER, which is the financial system, they all organize the data differently. So when we tried to pull information from these various systems, they didn't quite match up. So that obviously is a problem. So then we decided to establish a standard hierarchy based on the relative size of the asset, whether it's an intercept or a collector system, major pump station, minor pump station, and also where it's located.
Before
Mr.
Chair. Mr. Powers and Mr. Weiner.
You were saying your consultant asked the employees, and how are they, is that all the employees, or how is that? Which employees are they asking?
The 40 in the previous one, they interviewed employees. Yeah. It was a cross section, I think approximately 40 or 50 different employees. They asked some simple questions like, what do you do? How do you do your work? Who do you report to? The information you provide, where, how is that used? Information like that.
And I guess the question I have we been doing that? I've talked to some of the employees really working. I've seen them working along the side and call, where they're doing the lines and stuff. The people working out in the field, have we regularly interviewed them on some of these problems or not? Or how, the only reason I'm saying, I've worked in an environment that started totally different and changed over 30 years to being more of a team working everybody together and talking together to correct the problems in either manufacturing or maintenance in the building. I guess I really haven't, talking to a few employees, seen that happen here, and that's why I'm asking a question. It became a heck of a lot more efficient once we started doing that.
We married Acton General Land Special Services probably about a year and a half ago. We made a concerted effort, maybe about a year and a half, 2 years ago, concerted effort. We did what we called meet and greets where we have different supervisors of groups, not groups that they normally supervise, where we would be able to have conversations and pick up some ideas and things that they either thought they needed or how we can make the job more efficient. So we don't do that routinely, but we have done that on special occasions. And in fact, I think after we had done that, it was around about that time, I think just after we had done that, CH2M, Hill came in and were doing the same things, but they were really getting down into the nuts and bolts of what a nice job was. We were doing more of an overview as to, do you have the equipment, what kind of equipment do you need?
I guess part of it, you know, working myself in the union, them being in the union, you know, it almost has to go into the contract to be able to work this way. But a lot of times, the guys in the field probably know more than the engineer that's doing it. And to finally get them where everybody feels comfortable enough to talk to each other and say, we do have a problem over here, you know, it almost has to work. It'll take a few years to get to that, but it'll be a heck of a lot, and you'll have more morale because, you know, before it was like I could say whatever and nobody's listening to me. The supervisor isn't listening. It's not going any further.
That's why we try to, when we were doing that, is to try to take people outside the normal supervisory chain to have somebody else listen to the issue.
Yeah, I'm just... You know, part of it was a team concept. That was the Japanese system that came in to the American system. And they didn't know how it would work with a union. And it has worked. I mean, it's still working today. It's improved a whole lot. But just going through it myself from the way it used to be, you know, when you're saying the interviews, a lot of times people are afraid to say anything, and you got to work that over where they can say something.
John Husband, Special Services. Keep in mind that the budget that we generate, a lot of that is because of the input that we get from the field crews into the crew chiefs who come in and deal regularly with the engineers. So besides actually our engineers doing like their capacity modeling, a lot of the problem areas are identified by the field crews. So we actually do have a pretty good working relationship with our daily problems.
But, I know we said it with the paramedics, and, you know, they have a little problem with exit interviews. partly, and who was interviewing was the management, which doesn't really get through to where the problems are.
Yeah, Wayne Merritt, Special Services. The group that came in from the outside, there were no supervisors.
I would think that was good.
And that, you know, that's the purpose, to just be, not that anybody would try to intimidate, but sometimes people feel intimidated.
Yes.
Supervisor, yeah, so those meetings were held without the supervisor being part of the conversation.
I know we had a meeting with the paramedics on a station, and we had asked, and really they didn't speak up until he and I started speaking and knew it was going to be a better, they felt comfortable. But I think if we weren't there, they wouldn't have spoken.
Right.
I'd like to recognize Councilor Street, Councilor Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
I applaud your effort. I'm very familiar with CH2M Hill. They're one of the regular National Association of County presenters. I believe County Executive Chris Coons had initialized the contact with them through NACO. It seems to me that you've really hit on a problem with the defining of asset hierarchy. I've also spoken to Esri about the inability of the structure of Hanson GIS and TIER to communicate well with each other because they're not functionally designed to interact with each other. And following this model makes a whole lot of sense. As I've talked to fellow elected officials in other counties across the country, they're way ahead of us in terms of minimizing these ups and downs on the costs, and it seems like we're on the right path. I hope you'll continue to keep us surprised.
All right.
Behind you.
Oh. Yes. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Bob Wasserbach, County Auditor. I understand the county is
is in preliminary stages and looking into a new financial system to replace TIER. And it's also my understanding that a consultant was hired to interview people throughout the county or in specified departments to determine their objectives for the new financial system. Do you know if that was the same consultant?
I'm not really familiar with that effort. I knew they were discussing replacing the financial system, but I don't really know any more than that. I don't think it's the same consultant. If it is, it's not the same people that I work with. You know, more the sewer side rather than financial. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, hopefully this information from this consultant is being relayed to whoever the consultant was to determine the needs and the wants for the new financial system.
Right. I'll
testify
after that. Councilman Cartier?
You know, I want to reserve my comments to the end. Is this the last slide, or you got some more?
No, I got
it.
We're only
got,
like
sorry,
man.
I was just bringing up.
I'm going to wait until the end.
It was on that topic. Sorry.
Yeah, a lot of the questions and comments you guys are making, I think we're going to be able to address a little bit later on. So,
We'll wait to the end then.
I can certainly answer anything. Kind of the next step in the process we use to develop the program is to define assessment criteria. Asset management requires a lot of information about the condition of your assets. Are they new? Are they failing of some sort? And the other important thing is to provide some kind of consistent way to assess your assets. Because again, the end result is going to be to prioritize what asset is in worse condition, what asset do we need to get to before another one. So when we come to budget time and you know our budget constraints are such, we can say, well, if this is how much money we have, this asset is in worse condition than this one, so this is the one that we need to address. If we use different criteria to assess the assets, we're never really going to be able to prioritize. Second and last step was we performed a risk assessment, and we used the method called top-down. One of the first things I did is I said, you know, we have to know what our risk is. And risk is a function of the likelihood of failure and the consequence of failure. So the likelihood of failure, we used these three kind of criteria to actually rank. We actually quantified the likelihood of failure of our assets. And we looked at the structural condition, the capacity, and basically the maintenance history. And we used a weighted formula in that, as we thought, as far as our maintenance records, they weren't as complete as we were hoping to be. So we actually weighted the structural and the capacity component a little bit heavier than the maintenance. As far as the consequence of failure, or what would happen if this failed, how would this affect the county? We simply used the same categories as I defined in the level of service. Financial, regulatory compliance, customer service, work environment, public service and image. Because again, that's what's important. If this fails, how does this affect our financial viability? How does this affect our customers? How does this affect our regulatory compliance? We did not weight any of those categories at this time anyway. We feel each one of those is equally important as the other. In the future, when we perform this risk, just to further explain, top-down references, we don't have all of the information that we have right now. Our best source of information is our field personnel and what how they feel the system is operating. We do have some structural information. As you know, we do a lot of TVing of sewer pipes. So we use a combination of our institutional knowledge, some of the CCTV information, and we basically gave our institutional knowledge, put that into this top-down risk assessment to try to start with a risk of our assets. And then we also generalized some things. So if we found clay pipe constructed in the 50s was generally in bad shape, we used that generalization and applied it to other areas of the county. Again, this is just a first step just to get us started. As we start this process, the risk assessment is going to be from the bottom up. We're going to be doing a lot of condition assessment, a lot of CCTV, smoke testing, dye testing, so we know exactly how our assets are, the condition of what our assets are. And when we performed that, we basically were able to map what our risk was of the whole county. So the red kind of signifies assets which are in worse condition than others. Again, it's not meant to be an alarming thing, but again, it's a relative comparison to other areas of our county. So the areas in red are in worse conditions than areas in orange that are worse, you know, and so on and so forth. In general, we think it seems to make sense. The areas in worse condition seem to be the older parts of our system. So again, this is just a way to get started in this whole process. And then the last part of this was, how do we reduce our risk? Now that we know what our risk is, now that we know where we're at, where our assets are at, how do we reduce that? And we stepped through business case analysis for how to reduce the risk. And then when you look at how much money you have, you can then select the projects which give your biggest bang for your buck. And those last two steps really are what the ongoing asset management program is going to be. And hopefully I can step through this in one slide here. That basically represents a grid of risk. So you have your consequence of failure on the left and the likelihood on the bottom. So as you increase the likelihood of failure and or the consequence of failure, you move further up to the upper right of the chart, and that's where you're operating at the greatest risk. So now that we scored all of our assets, you can start to plot where these different areas are on this grid. And of course, what we want to do is move those areas down to the left into an area of lower risk. So what we need to do is consider the different options we have, and they're basically our capital projects. Can we rehab or replace the asset? Do we change how we maintain them? Can we improve our response time? In other words, do we proactively go out and clear our easements so that if the sewer pipe, which is in the middle of a field or next to a stream, we improve how quickly we can get to those assets and fix any problem we have? And as kind of a last resort, maybe the answer is we simply have to reduce the level of service that we provide our customers. If there's great financial issues, if we have, you know, massive layoffs, maybe the answer is we just have to reduce, you know, our level of service. But then the key is then to educate everybody that that's the resort that we had to take. What we can do then is cost out each one of these options. How much can we reduce our risk per cost? And then we can identify which projects give us, again, the biggest bang for our buck. How, you know, is it reduce our risk quite a bit, but it costs a lot? Obviously, what we want to do is operate in that lower left hand. You know, choose options that are lower cost, but still have a greater risk reduction. And then when you look at our budget, we can pick which projects that we're able to do. So again, that's kind of the process that we're going to continually take. So how do we get there? Now that I kind of laid out, this is what we learned, and this is what we'd like to do. How do we get there? Again, asset management requires a lot of information, and our consultant identified early on that we have a lot of issues with our information systems. The computerized maintenance management system, or CMMS, that our department uses is Hansen, and that was found lacking. And again, this is only specific to our department. I know land use uses Hansen as well, but for a completely different purpose than what we use it. So I'm not talking about Hansen in general, just how our department uses Hansen. And again, out of those interviews from our field personnel, they had commented that they don't feel it's user-friendly. It's hard to input data, and therefore the quality of data in there is sometimes suspect. Because it was not user-friendly, we had to create, or our IS department created a lot of custom applications, so much that I've been told the cost, if we wanted to upgrade Hansen, would be astronomical, because now all of these custom applications have to get reprogrammed. Again, we had identified early on that GIS was the strongest information system we have, yet Hansen had a very weak interface with our GIS system. Over the years, as you know, our budget has shrank, and so has our support, our workforce. So we've actually been receiving less support, or had fewer people to help us maintain these systems. The other failure that we had is that we didn't really put a lot of capital project information into Hansen. We know the information, but Hansen was really only used for the maintenance group and wasn't really used strongly by our engineering group. So based on all of this information, we decided, okay, we have to replace our CMMS, and we also have to improve our practices and how we manage these systems.
Mr. Chair, before we leave that, I wanted to have the list there. I believe there's a September date for transitioning from Hanson to a GIS integrated system. That's what I was told when we met with the administration. Do you have any clarification on that?
I'm not sure if they're referring to this or not. I'm going to get into the software as far as what we've chosen to replace it and talk about the schedule. Again, I'm not sure if that's...
Yeah, what I'd like to have is a migration schedule. Is that possible to put into a grid and provide to us?
I talk about that a little bit later.
Okay, can you provide this electronically then to us?
Yeah, I can provide this.
Great, sure. Thank you.
So we set up our goals, and now that we've decided to replace our software system, we set up our goals. We obviously had to get our IS support to do this. We wanted to use our GIS to the greatest extent. Again, that was our strongest information system. Our IS department actually asked us to eliminate as many of these custom applications as we can. We wanted it to be scalable. Again, one of our recognitions early on was that the asset management program was going to evolve, so we wanted software to support that to be able to grow with us. And also it was recognized that the software had to meet the needs of the entire department. So many of our sections work in conjunction with each other, especially in areas like our dispatch center and our warehouse. So it didn't make sense to have one maintenance system used by our sewer section and one maintenance program used by our internal services group, our building maintenance and parks maintenance. So the department had decided we're going to change all the maintenance groups in our department over to this new system. So we interviewed all the department sections, we documented their workflows so we understood how they achieved the work that they need to do. We compiled all their requirements and their wish lists and of all the bells and whistles that they wanted to see. And then we got the requirements for IS, because obviously this has to fit within the servers, the IT infrastructure that our county already has. We followed all the our standard purchasing procedures. We received 8 proposals. Our department watched detailed demonstrations from the top 2 vendors, and eventually we chose the software called CityWorks. The company that makes it is called Azteca. CityWorks has over 400 clients, mostly municipalities. They have some local experience. It's used by the City of Wilmington and the Philadelphia Water Department. It's considered GIS-centric, and what that means is it's actually going to use the database set up by our GIS instead of duplicating the data, which is a problem that we have right now. As I had mentioned earlier, Hanson has kind of one formatting of data, our GIS has another. That's going to get eliminated because it's all going to go within our GIS system. We can actually manage the work orders from GIS. As you're probably aware, everything seems to be easier when you're looking at a picture rather than a database or lists of some sort. Right now we think we can replace about 15 different custom applications, meaning there's less maintenance for our IS department. When we looked at the many different ways you can license software between the top 2 vendors, the best solution for us was actually the cheapest when you look compared it to CityWorks to the other folks. And again, it meets the needs of our entire department. Some other benefits, again, a goal was that it was scalable so we could, it'll grow with us. Custom views, we can create custom views. If you think of, like I like to use Google News, I can customize how that page looks at me by putting the national news up top or the sports up top, whereas someone else, if they want to see the world news up top, they can rearrange how that screen looks. And that's how we're going to be able to do it to configure CityWorks. It can also be based on your position. If you're a maintenance supervisor or if you're the GM, we can customize the information that's sent to you based on your position or your preference. The other thing, it has an integrated warehouse management system. Our warehouse manages all the different materials and equipment that we need, so that was important to have that close tie. And also, we're going to have the ability, it's called a service request application programming interface. our citizens, customers, whoever, can actually submit a service request through the website. Eventually, we hope to develop it so we can do a smartphone app. So if they're in a park and they see a tree down, they can actually enter a service request directly into our system. It gets sent right to our parks maintenance. And hopefully, you know, the response time for that request is very quick. Where we are right now, I've coordinated with IS. They have all the servers prepared. The software should actually start to get installed very soon. The configuration and implementation schedule that you had asked about, we're going to start with the engineering and environmental compliance division. Compared to the maintenance, the way the engineering division will use it is relatively simple, so we thought that would be the best place to start, just to hopefully get some success and gain some momentum into implementing this whole software. We plan to do that this spring and summer, move into our environmental operations division later this fall and into the winter, and then the internal services, again, building, maintenance, and parks, we hope to implement the software next year. Just another example of what I was talking about, a picture kind of tells 1,000 words. I printed out, this is a picture of a work order that we have on the left. It basically just says there's some kind of mainline stoppage in an area, and it looks like the address is 3 South Mary Street. And it gives your manhole numbers, so it kind of tells you where the crew chief should go. You know, typically, if they don't quite know what they're going to get into, our maintenance group will look at, all right, what other work orders have we seen? What other problems have we seen on this line and this area? So maybe I have an idea of what I'm going to encounter when I get there. So on the right is simply a list of the work orders on that line and in the close vicinity. But if you use our GIS, you can see very quickly the brown denotes grease problems. So right away, as soon as he looks at that picture, he can tell, oh, I might need to, you know, the right equipment to get rid of some grease. It's just a very quick and easy way to determine what your problem is. And this is basically what CityWorks does. Half of the screen that most of the maintenance workers are going to see is going to be the GIS system. And on the left side is going to be the work order system. So if you want to do work on certain assets, you can simply select them in GIS, point and click, and then the right information automatically gets populated into the work order. We have some limited ability to do this now, but it's only a couple people within our department. This will now become part of everybody's standard procedures. That didn't turn out too well, but anyway. One of the information systems that we could not replace with standard CMMS software is MIS Utility Ticket Management. If you didn't know, our department, I think, manages about 3,000 tickets a month. And again, we found that nothing will do it out of the box. We could use CityWorks, but again, we'd have to create some kind of custom application within CityWorks to get it to work, which is basically where we're at now. So we came across this software called DigSmart. It's again, commercial off-the-shelf product. It automatically would create work orders in CityWorks. I think CityWorks and DigSmart is a partner. It'll actually analyze the data that we have within GIS, and if there is no sewer assets in that area, it'll actually prepare an all-clear response directly back to MIS Utility. And again, it's been successfully used at the City of Wilmington, so we know it works within the Delmarva MIS Utility. I just talked about how we're going to replace the software, but again, the other issue that had come up is the processes in which we use the software was also an area of concern. Changing the software alone won't solve our problems. Software is a tool. You know, if you give someone a wrench and they're hammering with it, it's not a good thing, even if you give them a new wrench. So we really have to improve the processes and the way we support the software. We've determined, you know, our data collection is going to be per industry standards. We also are starting to meet with the different sections and getting their input for what data do they want to see to help them analyze the system. I mentioned earlier that we had documented all their workflow processes, so we can actually look at how they do their work, and maybe we can make suggestions, or our consultant can make suggestions and improve how we do the work. And as was mentioned earlier, as part of the budget for fiscal year 14, we're also proposing a total of three new positions. Two of them are IS-type positions. One I loosely call a system analyst, and the other position a staff engineer. What these positions are for is to maintain this information that we're collecting. We're going to be collecting a lot more information than we are now, and we need to maintain that information. These positions are going to help us do that. They're going to establish and monitor input standards to make sure that the data that we're getting is good data and it's data that we can use. And obviously, if there's any kind of issues between our IS department or even with our software vendor, these positions are going to help coordinate the resolution of those issues. The other position, it's actually in the budget as being funded for only half the year because the software's not up and ready yet, but it's a maintenance work coordinator, again, kind of loose term. To go back to one of the beginning, I said that our consultant recognized we didn't have a work expediter or someone's sole purpose is to plan and expedite the work, and that's what this position is going to do. They're going to schedule the field work. They're going to ensure all the resources are available, so when our guys are ready to do the work, everything's available. The pipe is in the yard, the stone is in the yard, the manhole is in the yard, the equipment's, you know, either in the yard or the rental company's been contacted and it's waiting to be picked up. We do have an engineer that's helping to support our construction support group in doing sewer repairs. He just commented to me last week that it took him almost 2 days to try to coordinate all of this work. You know, it was just a few different projects. It wasn't even a daily kind of maintenance routine thing. So again, this position is going to help our field supervisors stay in the field, execute the work, make sure it's done properly. Step two on how we get there is, again, we simply have to implement this plan, this asset management plan. Again, asset management is a proactive way to manage your risk. And right now, we are reactive to our risk, to sewers. Our operations group does do some of this, but again, their focus is maintenance. They go to clean the pipes, and sometimes when they clean the pipes, they realize they're cleaning dirt and pieces of pipe. So that's when we recognize, okay, there's a problem here that needs to be investigated. The engineering group, our capital projects are almost always in response to an unknown issue. Most of our capital projects are driven by our flow monitoring program, the flow meters we have in the pipe. When we see the flow meters go way up during the storm, we know there's lots of holes somewhere, so then we initiate projects to find those problems and fix them. But again, that's reactive. There's already some kind of problem that we need to address. So in order to properly implement this asset management plan, we have to make some major changes to how we do business. We have to improve our data management, which is step one that I talked about. We have to complete the development and standardization of those new processes that I went over. But we have to start doing more proactive condition assessment. And an example of proactive condition assessment is our DELDOC coordination program, where we go out and TV the sewer pipes under the roads that DELDOT's going to pave. It's a great thing, but it's very limited, and we are at the kind of the behest of DELDOT. They give us a list of what roads they're going to pave, and then we go and do the TV the pipe to see if there's any problems. We have to expand that. We have to initiate that, and that needs to be a part of our daily business. And we also need to evaluate how we're structured and our staffing. Again, we're not really focused on this proactive condition assessment. We're just not set up that way. We have our operations and we have our engineering, but no one is truly focused on this proactive approach to managing our risk. Here again are some of the reasons why we want to do this. Again, there's potential cost savings, and I listed just a couple examples here. Of potential cost savings, and I got these from our consultants in other areas that they've worked. Northern Kentucky, serving 300,000 people, saved over $700,000 in the first year of preventative maintenance. Massachusetts, serving 2.5 million, reduced their work orders and volume of repair work by 43%. Another reason is basically no more Brandywine hundreds. You know, we want to be out there proactively and take care of these problems before they become failures or before the regulatory agencies step in. Another benefit is that we're going to prolong the life of our assets. If we take proper care of them, they're going to last longer. And again, it's easier to fix a pipe rather than replace it, so our whole life cycle cost should go down. We'll be able to truly plan our capital improvements, because if we're proactive, we can stagger when we address all of these issues into the future. We'll have consistent and expanded data-driven analysis, which improves the level of trust. You know, we want people to know that we're not just picking things out of the air. There's a sound reasoning behind why we want to do certain projects. We have that sound reasoning now, but if we have it in data, if we can trace all the way back to our risk assessment and show you numbers, I think that improves the level of trust not only with council, other elected officials, also regulatory agencies and our customers. And the last thing is that we know it's asset management is encouraged by the EPA. I recently learned that the city of Baltimore, which is in order, they actually put in their plan to address the EPA's concerns that they're going to form an asset management division. And that was actually accepted by the EPA as an acceptable way to address the issues that the EPA has brought up. So we've already discussed, maybe that's our own strategy for the Brandy 100 rehab program. We're only in phase one, you know, we're kind of coming to the end of phase one, but there is a phase two and a phase three. If the EPA already accepts asset management plans as a way to mitigate your risk, perhaps we can, after we are done our phase one, we can go back to the EPA and say, the rest of the Brandy 100 phases are going to be put into our asset management program. And that, again, that's already been shown to be a good defense. So it's another reason why we really should get into this program. And I think that is my last slide.
Okay. Let me go around. I'll start from the right and go around John and Mr. Weiner and then Phil and Dave.
I think it was a really, great presentation, and I'm glad the department's taking this, you know, proactive approach of asset management. And, you answered my question. Just to kind of put it out on the table, you know, we have 1,800 miles of sewer that I'm aware of that we're responsible for in the county. For any 750 miles of it, the rest of it is out there. But it seems like you have actually done some reconnaissance and categorize its condition all over the county by that slide, so we know where we've got, you know, problems, really top priority problems, and where we're you know, in the green and we're good in other areas. So I'm glad to see that, you know, we are thinking that way. And I guess the only other piece to this is, you know, if we do have areas that are in serious trouble, you know, we're not likely to have a municipal bond market like we have today in, you know, 5 years from now. Just, I think it behooves us to think about, you know, doing some more work, replace more work, and doing capital projects, given the fact we, you know, we're borrowing money at such favorable interest rates. So that's the, I guess you've identified the problem areas. Now, you know, we're gonna go after and do some work.
Again. Yeah. Those areas represent where we feel is in the worst condition. Again, we don't have all of the data that we need to know, but just based on our institutional knowledge and some limited data, that gives us a place to start. So now we know, all right, we thought this area was bad. Now we can really go in and focus on it. Is it as bad as we thought it was? Maybe it's not.
Okay.
But we still, again, it's that what we did is just to get us started,
right.
And then the idea is that we're going to continually do this, and those, we're going to improve how much we know about our assets
right.
over time.
And you know, the other thing about Brandy 100, which was kind of bad for us, was really driven by, you know, the EPA coming in with a big stick. So, you know, we don't want to be in that position again.
Correct.
You know, I'd much rather have us take this proactive view and, you know, really go out there and do, you know, we have a preliminary idea. Let's go do some reconnaissance. Let's really see what we're dealing with. And from that point, I mean, my feeling is that, you know, a lot of the system was oldest in the Brandy 100, but there are plenty of old parts of the system that use terracotta piping. It's built with federal dollars, you know, in the same time frame. You know, I'm sure we've got issues out there we should be addressing. So I'm going to continuously put that idea out there, and, you know, we've kind of had that whole lesson that we we learned from the Brandywine 100 issue.
All right, Councilman Wominer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason, and Wayne, this is a compelling cost-benefit analysis. It leaves me with no other conclusion except that we need to bring in the system analysts and the staff engineer. I just urge you to cross-train within your department. Wayne, for the record, is nodding yes, so that, you know, if they're out for a month, whatever, we don't lose the proficiency of this integration. I also want to note that the CityWorks is the leading provider of these services. I had the pleasure of seeing a CityWorks presentation a month ago at the NACO conference, and Esri, who's another one of our consultants, is with the blessings of our chair of our executive committee, Council President Bullock, is coming at a future executive committee meeting to make a presentation on the apps that CityWorks provides and the benefit of the integration of the GIS system. I also would like to see a dashboard designed for whether it's the county executive or each member of council, so that we're available that just for the benefit of council. It's a dashboard is simply a graph which pops up on our computer that looks in a dashboard configuration how whatever we want to see empirically measured how it's doing, and we can quickly read just by looking at that one visual whether our interest might be, Mr. Chair, your committee and or other functions of county government. I'm pleased to see that we're going to be integrating DigSmart with CityWorks, and that CityWorks and DigSmart are used to partnering with each other, just for that reason. Thanks.
All right, a little housekeeping. I don't know if I announced Councilman Tackett has joined us about 15, 20 minutes ago. Okay, Councilman Bell.
I didn't have anything.
Oh, you didn't? Okay, very good. Councilman Powell.
Thank you.
Because I held off. But where you had the chart with the red and green areas and orange.
Would you like me to go back?
Yeah. We got some questions there.
That one?
Yeah. And when you were explaining that page there, you were saying, you know, some of the ones in the middle would be cheaper to fix and, you know, in color, meaning the blue, yellow, and orange. I think that's what I heard. You know, looking back at your map, go to the other page, you know, saying, you know, a lot of it is up Brandywine 100, a lot of it's in Councilman Sheldon's district, I mean, up in yours, but, you know, there's one I'm looking at right there that goes up to Levere's, it's in red, up Polly Drummond Road. What if it's in red, how, you know, it probably was done almost the same time. I mean, what could be the failure on that bond?
That one in particular might be a capacity constraint. There's some proposed development, I think, in that area that hasn't materialized yet, but I think, you know, again, our likelihood of failure, the whole risk analysis includes structural capacity and maintenance. So I think in the case of the Brandywine 100, most of it is structurally driven, where in some areas it's actually a function of capacity.
I guess what part of it is a lot of that's preserved up on the, especially the upper end, because middle runs in between there on the other side. I mean, part of it has to be almost filled out, except for what we brought up with our Turner's property a few weeks ago.
The other thing to note is,
I mean, what are those lines? They're all gravity because there's plenty of downhill. How big are those lines?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. The other thing to remember is these are relative comparisons. Red doesn't mean it's about to fail. It simply means it's in worse condition than some of the other areas. So it's not, it doesn't mean that it's about to collapse or it's about to overflow, but compared to some other areas, it's in worse condition or risk than others.
I mean,
that area specifically, I guess, I think it is a capacity concern.
I guess I'm also looking at Black Cat in red, and what used to be my district, and Councilman Bell's. That's probably Langola in red, near Army Creek.
Looking about there?
Yep.
Yeah.
What, I mean, part of it is I'd like to know what some of these failures are. And, you know, I know one day the line coming out of Towns End going down in the bottom, it's in green. I know somebody asked what the size was. And the only reason I knew the size is they were working on a manhole, and I looked down there and I said, what is that, the size? And they told me exactly what it was. But don't we know what all these lines are?
We do, yes.
I mean, especially the ones that are in, if that's the reason. Now, Delaware City, I know there's upgrades that have been done there. There's money now coming in for a subdivision that's going to be built right on the upper end.
Correct.
For improvements. Is that what it's in red because we haven't done it yet, or is it what's putting Delaware City in red?
I would say you're correct.
I mean, I'm just asking.
No, absolutely.
I mean, part of it, knowing what's coming along, especially when it's in our districts, mm-hmm. we know there's things that are going to happen that are going to change some of them to red to green, I would hope.
Correct. The other thing to recognize, this, I think we completed this maybe a year and a half ago, so some of the improvements have already taken place. Specific to Delaware City, I believe you're correct. I think there's a project now, I don't know if it's been awarded or not, but there is going to be a project in Delaware City to upgrade some of the sewer in there. Actually, somewhat separate from the development that you were referring to. I know there's some treatment, well, the treatment plants aren't a part of this initial effort, but I know there's some pump station work that's also being done down in Delaware City. So that might have been the reason why it's red.
I mean, the other question, too, is with Port Penn, it's in orange. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was with the executive there a few weeks ago when Bruce Sanis lost his dog for 2 days.
You were down there looking for his dog with the executive?
We got out to look at we were showing him where it was, and the dog went out to go, and it never came back.
He found him the next day.
We were all looking for the dog. But, are we going to do any upgrades there to correct that problem?
Right now, yeah, there is. I know there's one project that we have that's going to improve some of the system down there. One of the issues that we had, and I alluded to a little bit, was the amount of maintenance information that we have. Some areas we have a lot of information, some we don't. Sometimes the maintenance information, we tried to use a ratio between unplanned work orders and planned work orders, because obviously if the work orders are regular maintenance, that's not a reason to believe the sewer system is in bad shape. But if they are unplanned, if they're emergency-type work orders, those are the things we want to take into consideration. We might have had 5 total work orders in that area, and 2 or 3 of them were unplanned for some reason, and that kind of threw the whole scale out of whack. That's happened in some areas as well.
So. I have another question, especially with some of these. I know the flows go up to Water Farm 1 coming down out of Middletown. Because of when the tide's up, you know, is that still the same problem on Port Penn too? Because the tide will go up over top of those manholes, or do we have manholes that we still need to raise up in those systems? I know it's on the Appaquinimic, and you know what it was is I was talking to Ron Graver, and we went down to see the flows. And I asked him, why are they peaking at 700 or 800? He said, that's when the tide's up.
I'm sure there is some tidal influence in some of it.
I mean, both of those systems. And so a lot of y'all know, Port Penn has a system, sewage treatment, Delaware City, and Water Farm 2, almost where that brown, Water Farm 1, sorry, up there. you know, some of those are, the old lines are running with the creeks along the, running right along, so when the water backs up under these storms, we're getting infiltration, so when we're peaking at 800,000 from the normal four, it's because we're treating brackish water. But is that what some of that is, brown along the Port Penn? Because you can go to Augustine Beach, you'll see how close it is to the water.
It's possible.
I mean, that's what we were looking at the other day. It's, you can tell where the tide went right over top of that. It was an island. I'm just asking, you know, some of them I understand. I guess the one I, when you look and you can tell it's going right up Polly Drummond Road. And when you have a state park all up in that white area, are we not going to improve that? Because there's no more really any building going up there to correct it? Meaning, you're saying whatever is there is a little bit of infill. It can't be a lot because it's mostly preserved.
Yeah, right.
If it's in red, why is it in red?
As I mentioned, I believe in that area it's a capacity issue.
But are we going to up the capacity? I mean, the capacity is only a little bit more. Are we ever going to up it, or are we just going to say we're never doing anything?
Well, part of it is we have to do this analysis. What are we doing as far as risk? How much money do we have? Are we going to address that issue, or are we going to address another issue? What's, as far as budgeting and planning, where do we need to spend our money? That's part of what we want to start doing.
All right.
Because the question differs that, you know, you still have Pike Creek area that, you know, might flow into that Polly Drummond area or something. I mean, I don't know.
It's a little, it's in better, it's in better color than up
and the other
there.
One is?
Yeah, I can, it's behind.
Where I live.
If you're sitting where, if you're sitting, I can see it right above your head.
Okay, so where I live is where
you're in the fly. Orange and not green, but the next color.
When Special Services, we can get back to council with the Pike Creek question.
Yeah.
And as I sit here, again, it's an angle, but I look at Delaware City. We've done a lot of work in Delaware City.
That's why I know.
Years. So it looks like there's a little green there.
There's still a lot of red.
That looks little here, but there's a lot of work within that green, but, I can guarantee you.
And I agree. That's why I was surprised to see it red.
Yeah.
Because suppose, you know,
well,
we've been doing a lot of
there,
and there's going to be some more money come from another subdivision upgrade, too.
Right.
Anybody else?
In your presentation, you went through some of the things that work coordinator, new job description. I'm assuming we have work orders every day now that have to be filled. So, as we speak, who's coordinating those work orders now, making sure equipment and supplies get to the scene?
Right now, the field supervisors have to do that work as well. So they're not only responsible to plan the work, but they also need to execute it in the field. What's happened sometimes is they go to do the work and the equipment's not ready, or they can't reserve the equipment because they have three other projects that they need to be in the field supervising and making sure gets done. So the idea is there's going to be one person that's going to sit in the office, look at the work orders, service requests, talk to the field supervisors, and manage or plan what do you need to do to execute that work. And then that person's going to stay in the office, make all the phone calls that they need, order the equipment, order the material, while the field supervisor is in the field doing other work. And then they'll simply say, okay, I rented the backhoe, I called the utility company, the pole's going to be supported. Contacted the property owner so they're aware that you're going to be there on Thursday. So pick up the backhoe at this, you know, equipment rental place, and then you can go do the work.
But who's doing that now?
The field supervisor. The guy who's actually in the field.
So now the field supervisor is just going to be relieved of all that responsibility?
Some of that, yes. Yep. He still is going to need to talk to the work coordinator to make sure he's getting exactly what he needs in order to execute the work, but then he can go into the field and do other work while the, you know, the job is getting planned. it's just a more efficient way to operate.
Can you give me an example of the other work that he can do that he's not already doing now? I mean, what changes specifically with the field supervisor?
Well, the field supervisor is responsible to plan all the work, organize all his men. You know, I think each one, at least in the sewer maintenance, they'll have three or four crews that they have to supervise. They're right now responsible contacting utility companies, making sure any kind of consultants or contractors that they might need are ready. Property owners, DLDOT permits might be needed. Again, utility companies, if they need to have a utility pole supported. All of that work needs to be coordinated and needs to be planned before you actually get out into the field. You have to make sure pipe materials in the warehouse, you have to make sure the stone is ready. There's a lot of effort to just planning to make sure when you go out into the field, you can actually do the work. Sometimes, you know, making sure that you know exactly, in the case of pump stations, which pump am I working on? Do you have that impeller? Do I need to order it? Do I need to run to Home Depot to pick up the right part? Or where is that part located? There's just a lot of effort that goes in just planning that work. If the field supervisor is responsible to do it, then he's either doing that work or he's supervising his crews in the field. It's inefficient for him to do both, or it just slows down the whole workflow in trying to get stuff done. So again, with the people that we have, we can't have one guy efficiently doing both of those tasks. So the idea is to get one person to plan all the work and then let the field supervisor know everything is ready, now you can go do that work.
What's the salary range on the new position?
That job right now, I haven't worked everything out with HR, but the plan is to be equivalent to like a crew chief 2, which I think is a pay grade 23. I think it's, I'm not sure specifically about them, $40,000, $50,000 range, I believe.
And as we speak, how many field supervisors we have in place right now?
Sewer maintenance, I believe, has 5. Plant ops, or pump station maintenance, probably has 3 or 4. Construction support, I believe, has 3. I believe that's roughly how many we have.
I mean, what's the salary range on those?
Same. Again, whatever the equivalent of a crew chief 2, which I believe is a pay grade 23 in our union contracts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Mr. Retta and then Mr. Tackett. Got Mr. Tackett left, so Mr. Retta.
Oh.
I don't know, Joe. I just forget you all the time.
I know.
I had you written down, too.
I know. Can't read. I'm glad to see you're starting to do a preventive maintenance. Basically, that's what, where I came from, that's what it was called, preventive maintenance. You go ahead, find out where you might have problems and correct them before you do have them. It just went off, but where the map was on both sides of the Kirkwood Highway there, going down towards Polydrone, but up further, you said that some of them might be potentially to fail in the red. Now, you've been down Delaware City. How many of them ones up in that area on the Kirkwood Highway side, on both sides of Kirkwood Highway going down, coming from Ellesmere going down, are in failure or could fail right now?
Honestly, I don't know where something is going to fail. Again, those, what we try to do is, from based on the knowledge we have now, rank the condition of our assets. So what you're seeing is in the red, that's where we feel they're in worse shape than other areas.
Right.
Doesn't mean they're about to fail. It just means based on some limited information that we have, we think they're in worse shape than others.
Well, they could potentially fail
right.
Faster than someplace else.
Correct. Based on the age,
so
based
I think,
on some pipe material.
Right. And I
like
think
that.
What Councilman Powers is talking about getting an idea, is just what we're asking right. What I'm asking right now is, if this could be potentially could fail in the near future, we would like to know this because there's some areas that can be developed or are going to be developed. You know, we had just on Maryland Avenue, you had a CVS there. Now, I know that there was another building there, but they still put upgrades and different stuff there. And now you're going to put, you had a CVS that was put in where Rock Bottom was, down near the racetrack. There wasn't, Rock Bottom didn't have anything like CVS does. So that's an increase in capacity. Even though we took down three houses, the houses are a little different than the CVS is. So these are things that we should be looking at too. And, you know, I think Councilman Powers is correct. I think we should know when you get set up to get the ideas of, in our districts, what could happen, because, you know, we might get a phone call in the middle of the night, or we might not know about it.
If we had real data that we knew an area was about to fail, we'll certainly react to that, you know. However, again, based on the information that we have, we had to make generalizations of whole areas.
I understand.
And again, based on old age, pipe material, some of the maintenance data that we have, and some investigations that we've already done, we ranked things. So hopefully this isn't alarming to everybody, but again, it's just, you know, there's got to be one, the first step that you take in doing some kind of process or plan, right, like this. And this was our first step.
It's just an eye-opener, that's all. Thank you.
I guess the big question is what Mr. Red is saying is, when can we get to the second step to say what is starting to be the critical point? Because Kirkwood Highway is old. I mean, that's been, you know, as a kid.
It's read right up through the whole thing.
Right. So, I mean, it kind of looks, it's not as old as Grandy 100, but, I mean, we're starting to achieve some of the areas there, you know. That,
absolutely.
So when the step two would be,
it's a bigger area,
to be able to find out how critical this is, I guess you have to get the asset that we have.
Right.
You're, and some of those areas are already bigger in investigation. If you look at the capital program, we have a project in the White Clay area.
Really,
we have one in the Pike Creek area.
Yeah,
I proposed one for the Little Mill area. So, again, those projects are in reaction to, we already know there's some kind of problem. Again, asset management, the idea is just to do that assessment continually, so these relatively short-term projects are going to go away. Because we're always going to be assessing these different areas, and we're going to always be doing minor projects, rather than throwing millions of dollars in a relatively short period of time. So a lot of that area, we're already aware of that there are some issues and already trying to address them.
Okay. You just keep the council people and, like you said,
informed.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess when you take a look at it, I mean, it's a great initiative to be able to better manage our system and look to the future. But, you know, for us to sit here and look at that map, there's an awful lot of red on that map. And so it may be that when you have that, maybe there should be some kind of a key that's associated with the different areas on maybe what's already approved or in progress, sort of what is our path forward. Because for someone to just look at that map, I mean, looking at it and looking at the amount of red that's in here, that looks like, you know, we're on the brink of disaster. And, you know, not knowing what is laid out for each one of them areas, it may be that in your information that you can relate to those areas.
Sure.
What is the problems? Is it being, and what year is it being handled before it becomes catastrophic and everything? But
I can certainly do that. I can outline, as I mentioned, there's already projects in process.
Absolutely.
And I can overlay that information with this map so you can get a comfort.
Yeah, that seems to me that it would make folks feel a little bit more comfortable that not only are you analyzing, but you already have projects and programs in place to handle some of them areas. But for someone to look at the risk scores in the map, you know, not knowing all the different projects that are already in place.
I should have gone through that faster on the presentation.
To this?
No, but just
this map, I should have just...
No, but well, now, but we caught hold of that pretty quick. I'm the one who told you to go back.
Anybody, anything else on this particular subject? Well, I appreciate it. It was a good job and what you did. And we'll look forward to really doing keeping the rest of the situation with the council people in the city. Under other, I received something from an umbrella group. And it basically, I don't know if we need to have a meeting at the part of this meeting. I'll give this to you, Wayne, after we're done. But basically, Denrex posted a new settlement and stormwater technical documents online. And it basically appears as a created requirement that the owners of stormwater dry ponds and other stormwater facilities to have an operation maintenance plan, OMB is what it says, written for them by a professional engineer, including a compliance to the plan in their annual reports, and have a current owner's contact information listed on the plan. This is very short notice, but Denrec has one public comment meeting on April 23rd, and other comments will be accepted until May 8th. They were wondering if we should have a meeting on this on April 16th, or if we could just hand this out to the council people where we could email this out to our constituents there. So I'll give this to you, but I was just wondering if we should put this on the next agenda, or if it's because, you know, April 16th is only a couple weeks away.
I'll wait, I'll get back to you.
Okay, if not, we can email so we can keep our maintenance people happy. I mean, sometimes it's just as easy to give it to the maintenance people from us instead of having a meeting because they'll never hear.
Is it Denrec required to notify them?
I can just speak something, not because of knowing the state. It's really probably more the other two counties since they're, none of them have any maintenance corps. They were put in, designed by the conservation districts for Kent and Sussex County. It's gone. I heard some people campaigning in Kent County said, let's just fill them all in because they all have grown up. There's no way locally to pay for it. So I think, I'll bet any money it has to do with Kent and Sussex County, especially in Kent County.
Believe me, our special service. You're probably correct. We're pretty, we may not be perfect, but we're well ahead of the power curve compared to Kent and Sussex County. A lot of times they model after us in their processes. So that's why I'm not sure our stormwater management people know what this is.
If you think we need a meeting on this to include it, yes. If not, you can email. Like, I only have three maintenance corps, but, you know, this is still somebody that needs them up in Pike Creek area.
During the election, you know, being close to the county line, that's when I learned the discrepancies, because it wouldn't happen in this county. I mean, they have them really bad. Nobody's done anything.
No,
and there's no way to collect money to take care of
them. Yeah, Wayne Barrett, Special Service. I don't know if this is directly related, but I know probably a year ago we met with several state senators and representatives with our maintenance association people out of community services, and they were just bombarding us with questions as to how we did certain things. So I suspect this may be one of the things that may have came in.
We have enough headaches.
So I mean, how about this?
Like I said, this is an umbrella group at Pike Creek that, and there's more, Janet has them now more than Councilwoman Kilpatrick than I do now since redistricting. But they just wanted to know before their meeting, which is April 22nd.
John Husband, Special Services. And don't forget, when the plans get approved, there is a maintenance plan already written up with someone, and we inspect it every year and give them.
See, that's not happening.
How to fix it.
Yeah, no. If we can just get that in black and white in an email form with a stamp on it saying we're fine, we can send that out, and then it has nothing really to do with us. We're doing it already. Thank you for such a great job. Make him happy. Under other, Ms. Retta, something?
Thank you. Wayne, in the past, I brought up, and I believe a couple meetings ago, Councilman Smalley brought it back up.
And that has to do with the retention areas and commercial areas where the customers will be paying a high amount for 20 years, and then we go inspect them. We're talking about a yearly fee instead of a one-time upfront fee. Where are we at with that?
That was actively being worked by the previous administration. They're trying to get the information.
Well, it's two administrations.
And I have to have a meeting with the success office on that, but I'm sure...
The administration? They're well for it. I already had a meeting on.
Okay, good. You're prepping.
Okay, anything else on the other end? All right, motion for adjournment's in order.
So moved.
Second.
Is there a second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much.
We've got 5 minutes, gentlemen.